This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hi everyone, this is Lana. Thanks for joining me. Radio 314 shows are usually released every other week, but since I have so many great guests lined up, I've decided to release shows more frequently to get them to you quicker. My guest today is Finnish Juha Lindroos. He's a teacher in the field of sustainable development with a master's degree in corporate environmental management. Juha is interested in environmental philosophy, ecology, and the language and forms of nature. Lately, he studied the relationship between multiculturalism and sustainable development. Well, remember how environmentalists used to be concerned with overpopulation and the depletion of resources? Well, not anymore, because mass immigration into European countries is more important than its effect on the environment. Environmentalists used to talk about how depletion of resources and overcrowding leads to war and conflict. They used to point out that an unsustainable, continued explosion in population growth will lead to natural habitat destruction and the endangerment of wildlife species and less recreational land for us to enjoy. They used to talk about how prices will rise when there's a shortage of basic natural resources, restricting freedom and creating limitations. Eventually, that land that's been in your family for years will be taken over against your will. I also remember when environmentalists used to complain about the large apartment building blocks going up to facilitate large numbers of people. They'd complain how these gulag-style building blocks were an eyesore to the landscape. But now these so-called green countries can't build these gulags fast enough to facilitate free housing for immigrants. The fact is that mass immigration into only white countries is unsustainable and environmentally dire, considering the numbers of people flooding in then procreating. Westerners have enabled the population explosion in the third world because of medicine and also teaching about proper sanitation. So now the third world is having more children in their country, but also coming into ours and having several more children because it's incentivized. It's not white people doing the unplanned baby making. And let's not forget about pollution. Or how about governing the plebs? Forget about your government system of choice when there's a billion people in one area all fighting for different ways. Even if it was total anarchy, all you would be doing is fighting to protect your space all day, every day, and nothing else would get done. We are now adding 1 billion people to the planet every 12 years. 1 billion people every 12 years. We need to ask ourselves, will the addition of 1 billion people every 12 years competing for land and resources improve life? Juha Lindroos will discuss this and much more. Juha, a big warm welcome to you. I'm delighted to have you here today.
Well, thanks for having me. Pleasure is all mine, believe you me.
Well, you're my first Finnish guest, and I feel close to Finns probably because I'm Russian and my family lived not too far away. I've also been in Finnish Lapland during the winter, which was an unforgettable experience. Would you say Finns are closer to Baltic people or Swedish?
Well, that actually would require very, very deep analysis, whether Finland is part of Scandinavia or not, but it all boils down to the mentality, to my mind. We have the so-called eastern part who, I think the appearance and mentality can be a little bit more Slavic Baltic, but when you look at the people, for example, in the western Finland, they are very, very closer to Sweden. And let's think about my family, for example. Part of it comes from a Russian part, but some part comes from Sweden. So we are basically more Scandinavian, to my mind. So I can't say exactly how it is, but part of it is divided. So.
Yeah,
that's the best analysis I can give. And the Germans, usually, they think that Finland is part of Scandinavia.
Yeah, most people do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have so many important things to discuss. And today we're going to approach a topic I have yet to hear anyone fully address, which is insane, namely the connection between mass immigration and sustainability, the environmental impact. But before we get into the subject, maybe you can give us a brief rundown of your professional background, if you will.
Right. Well, I think it started in the last 10 to 15 years when I studied the environmental field. It was about waste management, energy technology, and all about ecology and a lot of environmental studies. I was always really interested in that. So I did that about 8 years, and then I worked, let's say, 4 to 5 years in a university of applied sciences. That is like a university college, the bachelor level university, let's put it this way. And I worked in the field of sustainability, mostly related to corporate sustainability. But since I was interested in the so-called language of nature, so I also did some part-time teaching in high school about environmental philosophy and the relationship between man and nature and those issues.
Oh, very nice. And
and at the same time, on the other side of the coin, I was able to study a lot of cross-cultural studies as well. And anthropology, I know it has a little bit negative meaning these days, but I find it really interesting too. So in the last 2 years, I was able to combine those two very multidimensional and very broad fields together, basically the impacts of multiculturalism in all the dimensions of sustainability, cultural, ecological, and financial.
Excellent. Well, one thing that drives me mad is the concept that the left owns sustainability or environmentalism, because as we know, this has always been important to our ancestors who were not leftists. And of course, National Socialist Germany brought back those concepts of environmentalism. But what can you say about the left thinking they own environmentalism?
Well, this is a very, very interesting issue, actually, to be thinking about, because if we remember, it was 5 to 10 years ago, at least in Finland, when the leftist, or I like to call them the neo-leftist anyway, so they addressed the topic of sustainability. And exactly the same people who talked about those topics now, they don't talk about environmentalism, but they talk about tolerance and multiculturalism. The same people. But the thing is that I don't know where it derives from, actually, the idea that the lefts have basically owned the term sustainability and they like to communicate it. But I can tell you that we had two very interesting men in Finland, and they were, one of them was a fisherman and the other one was an environmental engineer. And they were the so-called old school men. They possessed so kind of masculine values and they communicated a lot about environmental stuff, but Nobody was interested in them. You know, it was not so fashionable, or I don't know what it is, but it is a sad thing. And I think it's in everywhere in Europe, the idea that so-called left-tolerant people have always communicated about sustainability. And they don't even understand that their view of sustainability is not actually so environmentally.
No.
Yeah.
No, like the left is anything but sustainable. They're living in fantasy land. It's just funny.
Yeah, it is. And the same thing in here. I mean, I used to think that Finland would be more closer to Estonia once I heard the Kristiina Ojuland interview, which was really good. But when you look at today's, let's say, newspapers or the language and the terminology, we are exactly in the same situation as Sweden or maybe some of the other Scandinavian countries. Only difference is that we don't have that many people in here.
Yeah, and I want to get into some of those cultural nuances later in the destruction of Finland. But you also told me that if you're a traditional man in Finland, and many white countries, I'd say now, you're considered unsustainable to the left, right?
Yeah, for some reason. I mean, I guess it has something to do with the idea that everything that is traditional, it's not so hip or nice or cool or trendy. I mean, this is at least when I have talked a lot about different people from different backgrounds. So that's always the case, that for some reason, they think that we want to go back 1,000 years to the cave times or something like this.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. I mean, 80s was really good time, and 70s, even 90s, that I think. But yeah, that's a good point. For some reason, the leftists, I think masculinity possesses some kind of threat because you cannot control. Jack Donovan put it really, really well at one of his interviews. So I guess it's also something about that.
I think a lot of young kids are also programmed with this idea that the white man pillages and destroys the environment. But, you know, the dark skinned people are really guardians of the planet environmentally, right?
Well, it is, not probably exactly as that, but give us five years and we'll be talking about that exactly, the same words. Yes, that's the direction where we are going, and it has happened fast. In the last 1 or 2 years, a lot of changes have taken place.
And it's ridiculous because really, when you look at Finland and northern countries, all white countries, it was the man's man that really built your countries, right? You had like brave Finnish forest men who built your country, right?
That's exactly how it is, and you can look at it from very different perspectives, and I think it always is the same case there, especially after the war time. And of course, when you lose the war, it does something to your identity. But at that time, let's say 50s, 60s, and 70s, men were men and women were women, and everybody who were in between, they never complained. They played along, but they were not demanding of their rights or anything. But that's how it was. I mean, those were the so-called retrosexual people who really, they didn't complain, but they built and they worked their asses off, so to say. It was really something.
Well, Finland, like many Northern European countries, they have government-funded research centers and other institutions, and so they're controlling the terminology and the dialogue on environmentalism. So is multiculturalism being added as part of the sustainability idea?
Oh, that's a good question. Actually, I don't think it is, at least not in that. You don't see the terms being combined. But somehow I saw already there was one institution, I don't remember what it was not the United Nations or any Finnish Red Cross, those are really crime parties, but it was one of the parties who actually, they had added multiculturalism as part of the so-called cultural sustainability. And when you look at the very old definition of sustainable development, you didn't hear anything like or see anything like that. It was basically categorized and defined in a different way. But yes, it is. That's also the direction where they are going. Because now, only in the last 2 or 3 years, I've learned to understand how much language is reality. And once you communicate it enough and enough, then some people or most people actually start to believe that way.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we were corresponding through email, you were telling me that the original definition of socio-cultural sustainability was actually about maintaining and protecting different cultures and heterogeneity of the cultures, which is really interesting how far we've slid in such a short period of time.
That's exactly how it is. I mean, preserving traditions, manners, sacred things, myths and belief systems and all that kind of stuff. That's the so-called biodiversity in cultures, so that you would have many different cultures, so-called heterogeneity. But nowadays, what really multiculturalism as a political and behavioral belief system, what it does, it actually, as we know, it completely destroys cultures, especially when there are cultures who have higher masculinity, different kind of uncertainty avoidance and collectivism and all the power distances. So when there's collision, it's like in the nature, really. It's madness.
Well, let's talk about how mass immigration and population replacement is absolutely unsustainable and environmentally damaging. I know there's a lot of parts to this, but share some of those ideas with us.
Yeah. Well, we can start. I think the way at least I have thought about it, first of all, is the way once you, especially mass, I call it migration. It's not anymore about asylum seeking or immigration, but what we have been dealing in the last few months and a few years, it's migration. So when huge amount of people are moving from their original places to north, you need a lot of energy, first of all, and the consumption habits and so-called environmental attitudes and values, they differ so much. And this is a very, very good example. This is merely an ideological example, but I tell you this, it was about 2-3 days ago when there was one asylum place that they had 300 people from, I don't know, well, they don't know where they are. So let's just say that they were from the, let's say, Middle East. Let's call it Syria, okay? So it's easy. And they ran out of water in that asylum place, asylum house. And how can you run out of water in Finland?
Oh, yeah.
Because we have hundreds and thousands
of
lakes. And even if all the Finns would keep their taps open, the water would not run out. But of course, there's something else involved in that. But still, as an ideology, it was so fun to see that, okay, so now they were able to make the water run out. But it's not about, I mean, I don't usually say this kind of way, but yes, we have a lot of people in Finland who don't care that much about the environment, but at least we have the starting point, the potential to understand. Mm-hmm. And even in the kindergartens in Finland, we are being taught about waste and recycling and energy saving and biodiversity and the so-called ecological lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So you have hundreds and thousands of people who come from completely different cultures, and they are dealing with different issues in life. So that's what takes place. Plus, all the energy and material and waste issues. We have had problems with that. So
I always think about too, chopping down the forests to build more housing to maintain this entire immigration system, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that takes place so much in Finland because we have already houses. They are just kicking out the normal people,
to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, soon that will be taking place as well. As I heard in Sweden, they are doing that already. So, but anyway, to maintain the whole migration business and the whole migration system, that is extremely like anti-environmental.
Yeah, and what about the birth rates and overpopulation and the drain on the resources?
Oh, exactly. That's one of the many issues as well, especially in this context. I mean, it was some time ago. I did some research about the birth rate, and in Finland, it's pretty much the same, if I recall. But it's when you think about the, let's say, people from Africa or Middle East. I mean, it's like many times, and you can see the demographic changes. I mean, they have made estimations, and I don't know, in Finland it could be 30 years 40 years, but that's a short time if you think about the last hundreds or thousands of years how things have been. So a lot of changes in demographics as well taking place here,
you know. And now in Europe we're getting people coming from countries that they've destroyed their countries. I mean, there's parts in Africa where they don't understand conserving wildlife, where there's even no rats anymore because they've eaten everything alive and don't even know about propagating life and managing it so that it's there to keep you surviving. So let's talk about, has there been any studies on the attitudes of incoming foreigners about environmentalism?
That's another very good question. At least I haven't encountered any of those researches, and I don't think there is, because they're not even the researchers, let's say the tolerant, the leftist researchers, I mean, they are interested in importing a lot of migrants here. But I don't think they're interested in that much about the environmental values, attitudes, or behavior. And even, you know, we had one good research about this new houses were built to especially for the, let's say, immigrants. And it took only 3 months and all the houses had to be renovated. This happens a lot.
Wow.
And I don't know if they're burning fire on the floor or I don't know what they are doing, but everything had to be renovated.
It's like, so here in Section 8 housing, the free government housing, they trash it. We had some friends that worked in that department, and it is just unreal what these people do to these houses, this free housing.
We just had a few examples, a few photos taken from these were from the asylum houses or centers, asylum centers. And yes, waste problem, that is one, because I think they want to get into this. They already have this kind of, let's say, the gangster mentality and the so-called, they want to be in South Central Los Angeles, and they don't think about recycling or they don't think about environmentalism one bit. And by the way, now let's make sure at this point that when I deal with multiculturalism, I talk about especially African and Middle East people, because that's what it is in practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lefts are not interested in Philippines or, let's say, Nepal or Japan or Canada. No.
Exactly. Diversity just means basically, black people. It doesn't America, you know.
Exactly. And as in all of your other very, very good interviews, I mean, you've covered this so many times, so that's what it is in here as well.
Well,
reasons for that.
Have you seen, and I want to get into that later, but have you seen pictures of the trash left behind by these so-called refugees going storming across Europe?
Oh, I have. Yes, I have. And I've seen a lot of pictures from different places. And I don't know. I mean, it's like nobody. I mean, those people who wish to promote multiculturalism, somehow they have a choice. Everybody has a choice, but they don't wish to see this side of the issue at all. For many reasons, actually, but that's how it is.
It just disturbs me. I mean, I've traveled, I've been to many third world countries, and they trash, they don't understand about sewage, they don't keep things up. So I get really ticked off when people say, oh, it's white man that destroys the land. You know, it's like, okay, you haven't traveled and seen how some of these other people treat their environment. If anything, we have been stewards of the earth. Sure, there's a few assholes making chemicals or whatever, but it's not all white people, it's just a few people, you know. But even then, we have precautions to try and clean certain things up.
Exactly, and I think, well, the white man was the one who built the whole sewage system and the whole recycling system. So that's one of the things. But I don't know. I mean, I've never talked with the people who come from those origins or those places about their motivation or if they are even interested, because I think they have so many years and phases in between that they would like to fulfill and live without. I mean, before they would go to the point where they start to think about, oh, where do I put this trash or dust? Is this actually ecologically built or local or, you know, these kinds of things? So it's just the whole mentality is way different.
I don't know if you've heard, but Sweden has a company, and you can laugh, it's called Pee-Poople, and they're teaching third worlders how to dispose, excuse me, of their shit properly. So clearly we're not all equal here, you know? I mean,
yeah, well,
Sweden's a small country, and they're taking, you know, they're going to all of Africa to teach them how to, you know, dispose of their human waste properly.
I think maybe you've heard about the term called clean tech. I mean, basically clean technology and the so-called technological solutions. And I think Finland and Sweden, they would be, or even Denmark, and they would be very, very good countries to show examples. But I think we have had these examples for 30 years. I mean, and nothing just happens. You can do whatever you want, but it's just, the message just doesn't seem to go through, or it's not understood, or there's something.
Yeah, I'd say sense. Northern Europeans are really, really way ahead of the curve when it comes to environmentalism. They're pretty cutting edge and setting some good trends up there.
Oh, that's very well put, because that's the way it is. I mean, as a starting point, so-called default setting is already very, very pro-environmental, and especially. And then if we want to get deeper into that, we can analyze about the population and all the different factors. But we have been many, many hundreds and thousands of years ago, we were so close to nature, especially in the pagan traditions and the mentality and that kind of things. So yes, I agree with that.
One thing I don't like, though, there is a flip side to this. it's like a fake environmentalism. It's really absurd. It's like you guys have tons of water up there, but you're brainwashed into thinking you have to live in these, like, you have lots of space, lots of water. You're brainwashed into thinking you have to live in these tiny boxes made of all these synthetic materials and take these quick showers because, oh, the people in Africa, they don't have houses and water. Water, right?
Oh, exactly, absolutely. That's what we have been communicated for a long time, and especially in the use of water. I mean, I could understand if it was about the electricity, but that's true. I mean, I know that the world is not so equal. I mean, there is no such thing as equality in the nature. There is balance or a form of balance, but equality does not exist. It is against every single law of nature, at least in my mind. But yes, we have. That's the good side about it here. But then again, we also have longer winters, and we need different kind of more energy.
Yeah.
And in that sense, but yeah.
Yeah, one thing that drives me nuts in Sweden is IKEA, because you have so much wood there. And then they're using this fake wood and toxic glue and these toxic building materials. So in that regard, they're not quite getting that yet. They're thinking that they need to conserve resources. So then they use synthetic materials, which is kind of idiotic, because in the long run, that actually hurts the environment, right?
Exactly. And one of the sickest thing is that IKEA it used to be ranked in where there's a list of so-called corporate social businesses who are responsible businesses, or some kind of index of sustainability in relation to business. And IKEA is very, very high. But when you look at the whole idea, what IKEA represents in terms of quality and production and materials, etc., I mean, I don't see that. I can't feel the sustainability.
I mean, should ask them, just, hey,
it's not there.
Are beheadings unsustainable, or are they sustainable? Because there was one that happened in IKEA.
Oh, that was bad. Exactly. Yes.
Oh,
and then
right.
even the aftermath, that they are taking away the knives. So I at least that's what I heard, that they don't sell for some time the knives of IKEA. That's so basic and normal, like the so normal way to deal with the thing, and it's sad.
Oh,
it's sad.
Well, I think they're in shock, because that kind of stuff doesn't happen in those northern countries. So when it does happen, they don't know what to do. They're almost paralyzed in shock.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess so. And
Well, I want to talk, what about people leaving their destroyed countries? Would you say it's best for them to stay and try and fix the problems?
That's one also very good perspective. When I mentioned about these two great Finnish environmentalists, one of them had lived in Africa and had traveled, and he used to say that it's very, very unsustainable, especially when we think about the people, those who are leaving and who are staying. But of course, I mean, for some reason, they haven't been able to solve the situation for the last, decades and hundreds of years, and even longer. So there is something so profound in those countries that just the situation is that it as it is. And I don't think nobody or nothing can solve anything from outside. It has to, is whatever the so-called solution is, it has to come from within.
Yeah, I don't think you can just take thousands of years of evolution and say, oh, if we just, because those people haven't achieved a certain level, they haven't evolved to it. You can't just take them from Africa, plant them in Sweden, and expect them to be Swedish overnight either.
Oh, yeah. And there is one term called the so-called ecological succession. And it means that when the people leave the place and there are houses, so it takes, of course, a lot of time, but the nature will somehow, it will start to maintaining its original form. So I would like to see, let's say 200, 300 years, even longer than that, and we would see somehow the map of the earth and see what the situation is that. But yes, I don't know. I really don't know, because it's very difficult to predict the future. Even those who are studying the so-called future, who are analyzing and researching the future, I mean, even they cannot know what is happening in the very nearby future. But yeah, it is very unsustainable for those countries, and especially for the countries where they are heading, let's say Europe and Scandinavia, especially in this context we are here.
Yeah, and people keep talking about how, the Black Lives Matter movement, they're trying to say we're killing black babies and everything. No, if anything, we've been helping Africa's population explode, because white people are down there helping cure diseases and water and food and teaching them how to dispose of their waste, curing their gonorrhea and STDs.
I read this extremely good interview. It was from Der Spiegel, the German magazine, and I don't remember the name at the moment. It was a Kenyan a researcher, a black guy from Kenya, and he said that the first thing that the West should do is immediately stop sending money. That's the first thing. And he analyzed it really well, and the interview from the Spiegel had to repeat the question sometimes, because I don't know if he or she, whatever, they could understand or hear what they were hearing, because this guy was saying very, very good things, actually. I mean, rational and logical things. But yes, it is. We have been helping, and I don't know what the situation is in Sweden, how much they are putting to this so-called humanitarian aid.
A but lot, in Finland, actually. They were one of the top countries as well, one of the top 15,
I believe.
That.
Yeah.
What about that. Finland?
Well, that's the thing. We had it 1 billion euros, approximately 1 billion euros per year. And it used to be a little bit longer. Now, when the government is actually saving from those humanitarian help, so people are going crazy, oh, you cannot help that. They don't even know how much. I mean, maybe it's 1 or 2% of the people who know how much we are, giving money.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is like 1 billion euros. And if you take 200 million away, it's still 800 million, let's say, and euros. And think about what you can do with that amount of money over there.
Wow. This is just insane. Yeah, I know. And then we give so much, white people give so much in foreign aid. If we weren't here propping things up, things would go bad real fast. I know I always hear people talking about reparations for what they think was the worst slavery in the world, and how all white people should pay. Like, we've been paying constantly, and this is like white slavery at this point. And then I think Finland recently said that they wanted to tax the rich, right, to pay for some of these refugees coming in, correct?
I've heard a lot of crazy accusations and reasoning, etc. This one I didn't hear yet, but I completely believe it, because yes, we are the ones who should actually do everything for the foreigners. And when I think about it, at some point I thought about it that maybe I think it's the West who is actually maintaining the entire Africa with the humanitarian help and with the every kind of medicine and you know, and of course that money never go to that, it doesn't go to those people who deserve it, and even if it went, it wouldn't help anything. It's just completely wrong.
Well, what do you think of this idea, going back to equality, how everyone from the third world deserves to live like Westerners? It's a human right. What can you say about the impact on the environment if this was to happen?
That's a very good philosophical question about the so-called who has the right to do what. And we have had this so-called global responsibility in the last 1 or 2 years. That has been all the time. It's one of the, let's say, arguments that I call it the leftist or the liberal. What they want to say is that because it's our duty. And somebody even said this is somewhat of a rumor, but I like it so much. They said because the tar of the made by Finnish had been used in the ships, the slave ships that were taken from Africa to the States. So that's why we have to actually help them, because our tar, the thing that you put to the ships, and amazing.
Yeah, I heard come up with Jesse Jackson came to Sweden and was telling all these Swedes, "We built this. The blacks built this. You wouldn't have any of this if it weren't for us," and they were believing it. It's just fucking unreal, you know?
About this global responsibility and who has the right to do what, I don't believe in that. I mean, I just can't see. I believe in helping because we were Christian or Judeo-Christian culture after the pagan times, of course. But the thing is that I believe in helping, but I also believe in and some kind of logic or ration and function. And the more you get it, I mean, the closer you get to nature, the more you understand about the forms and language and all that, let's say, weird stuff of the nature, the more I think you understand that really it's beautiful, but there is no such thing. I mean, people just don't get along especially in certain situations, and different people, this is my point. And we have Jared Taylor who basically speaks about it, so that's so well put it what he says and analyzes. So.
Well, I wanted to share some funny cases of things immigrants do in Finland. Do you remember what some of those were, including the fire on the floor of the house? There was a couple more.
Let me think about, at least that was one thing. And this oven thing is also quite good. This is a true story. This is really true. That when people, when it got too hot, of course, they opened the window. But then there is, when it's too cold, they put the, there's electrical oven, and they start to heat the oven, even if we have those so-called like batteries to radiate heat. But you know, and you can only imagine how much it uses energy to heat the place in the oven.
Oh man!
But I don't know the best. I mean, the best ones. This burning the floor is really good, and the waste issues and the basic. There are a lot of them, and they are so absurd that you would not even imagine that when it happens. Then you understand, of course, but they are so beyond every kind
you
of
told me
our lifestyle.
They keep the water tap on because they're afraid the water might stop coming.
That was bad. That was really something.
And Juho, we're told our nations will die without these people.
yes, this is exactly like. I mean, it's madness. I mean, as I said, I mean, you can imagine the worst possible nightmare and the lowest quality circus in town, and you combine those two things, and that's what it is. And it's everywhere in Europe, everywhere.
Have you seen the gypsy squatter camps in Sweden? Have you seen some of the pictures? They're literally like crapping on the street.
I saw that. There was one kind of a combination of images, especially about the gypsies, and we also have had them. Yes, we have had the place in Helsinki, the capital city, and again, there were a lot of those tolerant people who said that, yes, they have the right to be here and, you know, open borders, so no borders at all. And yes, the gypsies, the places, they are trash camps. That's what they
are. Isn't it funny how Europe, especially Northern Europe, they love bureaucracy. I told you about this. They love laws and rules, and all of a sudden they just go anarchist for all these people, and all of a sudden laws and rules and paperwork doesn't apply. Isn't it incredible?
I think it's about the cognitive dissonance or whichever other terms you can come up with that context, because that's what it is. I mean, on the other hand, they believe in this very functional, and Finns usually, I don't know what the word is in English, but they are somehow against power. I mean, they are pretty humble. and pretty down to earth, even if their rights were broken. But then on the other side, I mean, nothing matters, because when once they go completely horny towards the multicultural way to see things, and nothing matters after that. And those are the people who are supposed to be highly educated, and basically traditionally from a good education system. I don't believe in universities anymore. I mean, they, especially in the social sciences, etc. But it used to be good. The quality used to be good when science was science, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Before Boaz got in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you told me the kinds of people that are preaching for multiculturalism up there, and it's really, I'd say, the same in a lot of white countries. Usually women working in the public sector or the social sciences, right? That's, you're absolutely right. I mean, look at Merkel, and then feminized men who work in the immigration business or in the EU. I think you're right there. Absolutely.
This is actually now the very, very, this moment, discussion starts to, and I'm glad, now they start to analyze a little bit. So who are those people exactly who wish this? I mean, not just, but categorizing, analyzing them in a deeper way, and especially their motivation. But once you start to look at them, to me at least, it's mostly they are Western, they are women, they are liberal, at least they want to proclaim themselves as liberals, and tolerant, and that's exactly, and those men, I have not seen a single man promoting, like a real man promoting, let's say, multiculturalism, especially if they understand what it is.
Yeah, because in men, inherently, they're warriors. They want to defend their borders and their people. This is how it's been since forever. You know, border disputes don't happen without some kind of a bloodshed. And I'm sure there's guys inside just screaming at this that want to go to war over these borders, right?
This is exactly as it is, and the only sad thing is that within the last, let's say, 30, 40 years, ever since from the 60s, or we can at some part, like, we can go even further behind the time if we want to go to the conspiracies, etc. But still, I mean, that's, people have been castrated, mentally castrated. Mm-hmm. And that's sad, because sometimes I really like the idea of internal battle axe. That was so good analysis of the situation. But somebody can ask, and I've heard this question from other people from other countries. I have a lot of friends coming from different parts of the world, and they say, so why don't you stand up? I mean, why don't you go there and do something? And I can ask the same thing. I mean, why don't we do that? Or why don't more people? But the situation is, there's a stealth strategy. It has come to this point very fast, but still somewhat like silently. If you go there now, even the police is not on it's on the other side.
That's right.
And there is a war going on, mental war on identity.
It's very tricky, because we can't go like the old days and go to war right away and go the violence route. I mean, eventually I think it's going to come to that, but it's very tricky. We have to really be strategizing what we're doing here, because we're up against many little trick roads, if you know what I mean, you know, lots of different mind control techniques on every end. So we have to really analyze which way to go.
Exactly, because it is cultural, it is, let's say, bioevolutional, it's biological, it has so many different levels and small nuances. And even if you do that, if there were, let's say, 100 or 1,000 people who would go to demonstrations, then there would be 10 or 100 times more people actually welcoming and opposing us in this sense. Mm-hmm. So it is so shattered already, and there are really two sides. I mean, as I discussed with one really wise and nice guy, it was 2 years ago, and we discussed that we have not seen this kind of civil war since we had the Civil War, basically, but it's been kept quite down there. But now it has bursted in the last 1 year, half a year, 3 months. It has been escalated.
Now, I forget his name. Is it Imo Nin? I think there was a Finnish politician.
Oh.
Yeah, he was arguing against multiculturalism. What happened to him when he started arguing against?
Yes, let's cover this very shortly. This is interesting situation. What he said, first of all, it was nothing bad, it was nothing severe, it was basically very normal thing. And the people, first of all, they wanted to analyze what he meant. Did he mean this or did he mean that? And they purposely wanted to misunderstand, because that gave them reason again to criticize the party that this Mr. Olli Immonen belonged to. And I can say that Olli was the name. He had written about multiculturalism already, I think it was 2 years ago, or at least some long time ago, and that was a very good analysis, actually, what he wrote. Very nice theoretical analysis, what happens and how, why it's not working. But I think it was mostly about the timing, because we had heard so much of the so-called Finnish bashing our identity and those people who built this country and nation. So what he said was that, but yeah, and they say he used a little bit different words, but there, as I said, there was nothing bad. The only and the worst situation that happened was that the own party actually condemned him. There was only one person who said yes, and I don't know what the situation is in the Swedish Democrats, if how much is it very unified and strong party, that I don't know so much, but I can tell
so,
that
so.
We have...
No, okay, Henrik's saying okay. No over there.
Okay. So what do we have, these so-called true Finns? This is not a good translation, because it's not exactly so true. But anyway, let's say the traditional normal Finns would be good, normal Finns. But the party is so divided. They don't have any kind of multicultural strategy. They don't have any of these. And there are two or three people who have really analyzed multiculturalism well in already many years. And they have dealt everything, I think, what is needed to know. But it was just the time and what he said. And the problem was that the own people, those people who should have been there for him, they condemned him.
Oh,
that's sick. I mean, he dealt so much bullshit from their own. And that has been the tradition of this party ever since they had the same root. They really got into high position for the last 5 years.
Maybe you have some rats in there trying to stir things up.
Actually, there are no rats. Actually, the sad thing is that they are just not competent enough. They don't have the understanding, the true understanding of cultures, first of all. They don't have the true understanding, maybe only very few, and also not enough courage.
Yeah, they're not hardcore courage. Enough, and a lot of them, they care more about, you know, Jewish identity and Jewish borders for Israel versus their own country.
That's true. That's also interesting fact that you are so interested in what is taking place elsewhere. And when we talk about the identity, one wants to go to Shangri-La, the other one wants to go to Babylonia, but nobody wants to go to Impivaara. And Impivaara is the sacred mythological, well, not mythological, but it's a sacred place in Finland, the countryside place where you can basically, So that's what's taking place exactly, yeah. But yeah, the aftermath of this Olli Immonen, he had to leave for some time, not the parliament or anything like that, but few issues that he was dealing with, he had to go down under for a moment.
Didn't they accuse him of being like Anders Breivik?
Oh, that was one of, among many other things. I mean, just bring it, whatever you can. I mean, that's what they are doing. And yeah, even I think the best thing was somebody said he even had similar kind of beard that Mr. Anders Breivik.
Now I have to ask, you know, Finland, you guys have been innocent. You're not guilty of anything, but you did fight the communists during World War II, right? There was some SS tanks up there, you know. Good for you guys, fighting communism. Good, you know. But do you guys get a lot of hell for that?
The wartime is very interesting. It's really interesting. And I don't think some people who are really deep and who know a lot about the political war history and those. Yes, we were partly at least alongside with the Germany. And yes, we fought against the communism because the Russia, they invaded us. So they tried to, and they did at least. So that was part of the. Yeah, the time you heard that also in the Greatest Story Never Told, and that was quite good in that sense. But I think if you think about the Green Party, if you think about the leftists, I think they wanted us to lose lose in a big bad time. This sense. So it's somehow it is still being some kind of a shame that we were partly. partly working together with the German troops and this kind of thing.
Yeah, do you guys get the same claim, like when you're standing up for Finnish people, that, you know, what are you, a Nazi?
Oh, yes, these days especially. I mean, yes. That's one, fascist. And I like the terms, how they change, because once it, first it was racism, then it was fascism. And I don't even know, once it can be a fascist, sadist, racist, or neo-racist, or constructional racism, or hidden racism. They don't even know what the words are. They just create new language, new terminology all the time, so that they could use it as in according to their agenda.
And it's sick, because it's in every white country. I hear this all the way from Australia up to Scandinavia.
So Australians are Nazis too?
Oh yeah, okay. Of course. They've got those. They want to kill. They want to gas 6 million Jews too down there, don't you know?
Oh, yes. I'm not surprised.
Now, you mentioned that Finland's changed a lot even since the 50s. What was it like in the 50s? I mean, it's like America in the 50s was completely different until Marxist filth really got in there. But what started changing in Finland from what you've researched?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think I actually admire, I cannot call myself a traditionalist, even though I would like to, and I have a lot of sympathy, and I really like to regard myself in that sense traditionalist. But after the wartime, we had to, because that's what I've been hearing from my parents and from my grandparents who were in the war. And my dad has seen Hitler himself.
Oh, wow.
And this is because Hitler was visiting one of the generals in Finland. And of course, my dad was really, really young, and, you know, but still in the same presence. So what happened after that was people had to start building this country. And as I said, it required strength, stamina, and it required women to be women and men to be men. And I don't know when it started to change, because to my mind, especially the 70s and the 80s, okay, that's not so long time ago, but the 80s was good, because Finland was building a lot of good technology. We were importing and all this, or exporting and a lot of these things. So I guess it's pretty much the same kind of story that in some other liberal cultures and countries. We just we built too much, in this sense that things started to be too good, and we had started to lose meaning, the true meaning of life. I mean, this is at least one theory, I think, that something happened. But yeah, we know not too many people living but working hard and under quite rather hard conditions. And it's just it was not 2012 that changed things. I mean, you would imagine that something great happened then, but it was in the year 2001. I remember the music started to change really, really. It got into completely nonsense, and everything started to be the rise of hipsterism and all these new phenomena. And I mean, I'm not so old. I'm 35 years old, and I lived that, and I considered myself somewhat trendsetter in some terms. But even I started to see this is not going anywhere. I mean, people have completely, they are losing their meaning. And, well, the business, yeah, the information technology was quite a success at some point here. But even now, because they outsourced and they start to sell it, so there is no so-called healthy nationalism anymore.
Yeah,
not in any,
I think kind of one thing. Of the big problems here is that we're not balancing technology and politics and science with nature. Because if we were to look back to our pagan roots, they did that, and we should have kept doing that. We should have kept that idea of nature in the center of our minds at all times. So how does this, you know, surround nature? How does this work with nature? Is it getting us farther away from nature, or is it enabling us in a good way? But we've cut off from that, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. This is a really important thing to mention as you raise this thing. The separation from nature, and it, of course, it derives from many, many, not just a few decades or centuries, but thousands of years. But I think we can imagine this, that some people are so-called techno-centric. They believe in technology, and they believe the so-called end of pipe, so that we put these filters and we use clean technology to save. That saves the whole ecological crisis. And we don't focus on consumption or production or those environmental impacts that much. And then there is so-called anthropocentrism, where the human is in the center of mandala. Human is basically God in this one. But the so-called biocentrism, where you are more, basically you are not necessarily part of nature, but many more things are equal in the nature. So you see nature in a different way, and that is something that we have really grown apart.
Mm-hmm.
And technology, of course, it plays a huge importance, but to me, the so-called rise of technology, it's not a root cause. It is also a symptom of some other phenomena. But the if we wanted to save what is left, you know, to be saved, I think the perception would completely, it would need to transform from technocentrism and anthropocentrism towards biocentrism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very difficult to achieve. I mean, it's very, very complex issue. But yeah, that's, and it would require, I think there's only one way, and it would require some deeper analysis. First of all, what are we as species and what is nature? And we don't understand one bit of that. People from the 60s, some of the real hardcore scientists, they understood what it was.
Yeah, it's like our people have become sick and now the parasites are coming to, you know, eat on the corpse, but there's part of the corpse that's still very much alive and is trying to sever off from that dying body, and it would be us. So it's very interesting to see where this is going to go, and is it going to collapse, or is it just going to keep going in this awful nightmare? I mean, don't you feel like it's a nightmare sometimes?
It is nightmare in so many different ways, not only one way or two ways. And as you said about the collapse, I believe it's so obvious. It is so, especially in this hyper-turbulent, progressive, because if you're not a progressive, you're nothing today. You know, you have to be somewhere in the very peak and the most, you know, forward, going forward, running towards the future, so to say, and especially to new technologies. And even those people who, the collapse, when will it happen, you know? I think it will be within 30 years, let's say, 30 to max 40 years, there will be. So whether it'll be cultural, financial, or environmental that is causing the trigger, and then you can start to analyze the impacts, what they have towards each others, because it multiplies and it creates a lot of other problems, especially the cultural multiculturalism on cultural factors, environmental issues. Now we have a global recession and depression. What are those impacts to other aspects of sustainability? So it's like a big complex mess, actually.
Yeah, you should check out Kai Murrus if you haven't already. He's Finnish, and his book is called Revolution and How to Do It in a Modern Society. He talks about the breaking out of the suppressed dark side within European man and how it's the source of energy and creativity. And liberals are doomed to fail since this side of human nature cannot be suppressed and males can't be emasculated forever. So he's talking about how hate is part of the human experience. It can't be suppressed forever, and it was provided by nature.
Yeah, that is something I have not become familiar. Actually, I can't say that much about that. But the collapse as an ideology, I think it's against the laws. This kind of growth and progression, it is just so consuming us. And I think the culture itself, people used to create culture. This is the way I like to analyze it. People used to create culture, but nowadays the culture itself is like an octopus. It has so many different, like this, you know, hands or arms or whatever, that the other one doesn't know what the other one is doing. And it's just progressing so fast that we humans cannot, you know, we cannot maintain this kind of, we can start to run, but the mentality, it just doesn't work. And we can even try to cope with that. But even still, I don't think it's not healthy. People are losing their minds one way or another.
They sure are. I look around and just, you can spot these diseased leftists a mile away. I mean, I go to the store and I can tell you exactly every single one of them that's like infested with this in their mind. You know, like you and I joked around, it's almost like an alien force has got into their brains and is like eating their brains, you know.
Yeah, this is when you, once you observe and you analyze and you look at the people and you try to look at them from a little bit different perspective or different way, you can really see that. I think it is already something so wicked and so strange that, as I said, it has to be some kind of a Gaian way or Gaian mind to to end this kind of nonsense, because it cannot come from a person anymore. It is so strange. And at the same time, as I said, I was talking today with this very old lady who understood everything immediately. I mean, she was so sick of this so-called tolerance. And how come some people understand it so well, but the other ones, they don't? This is what I'm really interested in. And think about it. It would take only 2 hours or 3 hours. You would go to Google and you would find the real and or the say, non-unorthodox information. And it's so close, but still people have so huge barriers that they don't want to. They have a choice, but they choose not to become familiar with a different kind of logic and information that would explain at least a little bit what is going on here.
Well, I'm starting to think that we're the strong that's going to survive, and these other people are going to die off or outbreed or become so degenerated that they are going to die off in some way or another. I really believe that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you look at the things that have been taking place in the last 5 years, of course, every generation can say that, oh, so many things are happening now and we are living so fast. And, you know, people, my parents used to say that, and it has taken place. But in my opinion, the information, that's one thing, the information has exceeded. There is so much information going on at the same time. And it's like we are being pulled from the future really, really faster and faster and faster all the time. And I'm really interested in about theory of the collapse and how and what form will it take. And when people say about the Third World War, I think it has been going on for a long time already.
Yeah, war is just happening in a different way. It doesn't have to be blazing guns in your face all the time. And genocide doesn't have to be mass slaughtering of people either.
Oh yes, and as I came across with this the Hungarian guy who won the Nobel Prize of I'm actually sure what prize it was, but a writer, author, and he put it so well in 2002 that it's like this liberal way, the logic that they are actually welcoming and they want to somehow to identify themselves with their own enemy. I mean, that's one of the examples of madness to my mind. And it's, as I said, I really like the idea of ethnomasochism. It's really interesting theory, and that is something that has not been studied a lot, or the so-called white guilt. But the way that you feel ashamed and you don't like your own cultural context, even though your culture is the one that has brought and built and created so many big and beautiful, nice things and science and all that stuff. And then even though you understand, you somehow understand that, but at the same time you try to put down every, you don't care about those things. But then when you have one person coming from a foreigner or coming from Middle East or Africa, it doesn't matter what or who he is, but it's already, they are like raising him and building a statue. Just because of what his race represents.
Yeah, so, it's mind-blowing to me. I can't fathom. I sit around and I think about this every day. What goes on in their heads? How have they become like? I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to understand how this is happening. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, and have you ever analyzed those people who are not tolerant from this perspective? Because to my mind, at least some of the Eastern European, for example, or the Asian people, when I talk about the Asian people, they are, if we are racist, I mean, then those people really, because they are, I mean, none of us is actually racist or fascist. It has got nothing to do with that issue, absolutely nothing. But the idea is that they don't promote or they don't embrace multiculturalism. And I'm interested in who are the people who are not in this sphere, you know.
Exactly. What makes them different? What are they made out of? What's happened different historically? I agree. I wanted to ask you, I know we're getting close to rounding up here, but I wanted to ask you about the Dutch sociologist Geert Hofstede. What can you tell us about him?
This is something I wanted to, yes, thanks that you remembered, or you reminded about that. Mr. Geert Hofstede is one of the most famous cultural researcher, and I think this is something, he analyzed cultures, and he did quite a lot of quite broad analysis of many different cultures, and it was, I think he made it in relation to business context, but he analyzed how cultures can be categorized into different dimensions. And these are the very dimensions that explain us how cultures differ from each other. And I've heard a lot of criticism, of course, criticism towards his theories, but after living in many, many different European countries and some in states and in Asia, I can say that these are so well conducted. To my mind, they really have many, many things in common. But we have to remember that in the last 5 years, things and values, deep values, have changed too. Anyway, so he basically analyzed cultures from different dimensions, one being power distance, the way we feel towards power and people who are in position of higher power. So the power distance can be small or it can be large. And then there was uncertainty avoidance. How well do we avoid uncertain situations? Like in Singapore, that was one of the examples that they had really, low uncertainty or high avoidance. So they wanted to control everything by rules and laws and regulations. When we can think about some other very liberal culture, they don't have any problem with uncertainty. And then the masculinity and femininity, very, very interesting and very important to my mind as well. Because when we think about the Scandinavian countries, according to this Gerd Hofstede, especially, well, Sweden, I think Denmark was also there, the Netherlands, Belgium, very, very feminine cultures. And he explains, of course, how this feminine can be indicated. So when you think about people coming from, and by the way, most of the African or Middle East countries were not even in the research because you couldn't, there was no way to basically analyze them. They were not people working in that same context where the other cultures were. But anyway, that was really interesting. When you have people coming from countries or cultures that are very masculine, and then they are entering to countries that basically have very feminine features.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And all the individuality and collectivism and time, the way you see time. So that was Gerd Hofstede's analysis, and it's quite old. I think he made it in the 70s, but it's very, to my mind, it's very relevant even today.
How is your average Finnish female? Where is her headset looking at all these invaders coming in that are mostly young, violent males? I mean, what goes through their heads?
Well, first of all, in Finland, we have had a good position that we don't have so many so-called third generation or second generation immigrants. We have them in the bigger cities, but like as we know, it's completely different than in Sweden. So, or in Denmark, I mean, I like Copenhagen, but when I go there, I mean, I look around. It's different. It's different. But when you look at especially the women, young women, I don't think they don't even know what being Finnish is anymore. There is no such thing as Finnish culture anymore. It's more about the cosmopolitan or global citizen. And those traditional Finnish values that and then they can say, oh, but hey, what is being Finnish?
Yeah,
what is Finnish culture? And I like when they, because then we can really start the discussion and I can tell, you know, all this. But yes, to answer your question, I mean, I think they are the so-called global citizens, and they think it's so cool, and they're so, oh, this is always the case. They talk about that immigration, it's only richness. It's a necessity. You know, we cannot do nothing about it.
Yeah,
so
they're
it's
all
only
programmed.
A positive thing.
The same responses all
it's
across
it,
every
all
white country.
The time. Year after year. I mean, don't they ever read what they say in elsewhere? Because they are repeating the same things after 5 years, after 10 years.
Like,
and
you're
when the reality
special.
Is so,
you're mainstream, you're pro-establishment, you're not a rebel, you're not anything different, you know?
Yeah, that's what it is. And but at the same time, actually, this is an interesting phenomenon as well. At the same time when we have a lot of growth in this so-called tolerance and liberal people, at the same time, there is a counterforce. It's also very small and not too many people, but at the same time, there start to be people who understand that this is completely nonsense. It's madness. It's sick. So they start to read different kind of information. And they probably, especially information that Red Eyes Radio, you know, these kinds of things. And then they get more, and then they, oh, but this is exactly how it is. And then they, like, it's a waking up from a dream or a nightmare or whichever, you know, this is what is taking place as well. But I don't think the so-called when I talk about counterculture, if you want to be really an anarchist or, let's say, punk, you should be, like, saying that I'm against the gay things and gay rights and, the, you know, homo.
Exactly.
That would be unorthodox, actually.
Exactly. That's where it's heading. We're the cool kids now.
Oh, no. Yes, that was good. Yes, we're the cool kids, yes.
So is it true that the police have no clue how many invader refugees are in Finland now? Because there have been some that have come up there, right?
Yes, in the last, this summer, it's not a summer of love, but this is a summer of misery or something, you know, summer of, you know, the strangest things, you know, ever. This is what has happened in the last 2 months. A huge, huge rise in the amount of people entering to Finland from all different directions.
Oh, no.
Well, not all, but from many different directions. And the police, you know, when they speak, like, they don't speak with passion. They speak like, like very monotonic voice, like they are too tired even to comment on anything. But when they say, they have announced that they don't have idea, first of all, who they are, like where if they come from Syria, if they come from Somalia, Iraq, well, Somalia, you know who those are, yes. But let's say the Middle East people, they don't know, but because they don't care. That's the thing. They don't know where they are because some of them are jumping. They don't want to give their fingerprints and they lose their passports, you know, when they leave or any kind of documents that they have. Of course, because they want to kind of, be somebody else, be from the war zone.
Yeah.
And all that. So it is true. And especially the problem at the moment is in the political level because it seems that everybody is welcoming them, you know. That's like
it's
everybody
awful.
Almost.
It's
yeah.
awful. I hate hearing that way up in ice, our icy land. You know, I mean, I do believe, you know, us European folks came up from the north around Siberia and all around Scandinavia. So it's a travesty for me to hear that land is being claimed, you know, it's being colonized again. This is neo-colonization is basically what it is.
Oh, that's good. Exactly. The word neo-colonization and the when you think about the Ultima Thule, the old mythological places of Scandinavia, and especially the Viking stuff, I don't regard Finland. When I read about some of the history, we did some trading with the Vikings. You know, we were more like the forest people, I guess, and the country dwellers in this sense. But yes, we had people from Finland who went with the Vikings as well. You know, partly they regrouped. Them, but it is like I think to me Scandinavia has always represented like a stronger symbolism and identity and all these things, and this can be seen when you go abroad, when Finns go abroad and you for example meet other Swedish people from in abroad, and then we get along so well, like it's like an instant, like this is at least my perspective on things. And but it depends on people, of course, and this is I don't know, because everything is happening so fast at the moment, and even I don't think they are actually addressing the real root causes or the real questions. They don't want to do that. They just and now, of course, when you already said about the racism and fascism, that is every time, every single day you can hear from the biggest so-called newspapers, you can hear that Finnish culture is nothing. Whether it's the food culture, whether it's the mentality, whether it's the looks of the people, you know, it's any kinds of things. And this is at the same time happening two things, people coming and, of course, the embracing the other kind. And, you know, neglecting your own kind of superiority or any kind of these aspects.
Well, like you said earlier, you know, the truth is on our side, nature is on our side, the earth force is on our side, and all our northern ancestors who are there, who have shed their blood, are in that soil. And I think that we can connect with that power again and bring something really victorious back, bring back a fire. So I'm still hopeful we can clean out all these people, but it'll come. It'll be a fight, but it'll come.
Oh, this is exactly what will take place. It will come, and it might come even sooner than many people have estimated. And then, you know, well, I don't know if it's a good thing or bad thing, but then the battle will be really hard. Because then, you know, once we get enough, then we get enough. And then, you know, what can those people do if there are no white men, you know, supporting or building or maintaining?
That's right.
I mean, that's the thing. And the problem is, I mean, I know this situation in Japan, and that some of the people, especially men, they are not interested in women anymore that much. You know, they have started to play their video games and, you know, other kind of realities. But when I look at these modern, let's say modern women, the hipster women, I mean, I can somewhat understand because I don't recognize any femininity in those people. So I can just say that they should be really interested in this because there are not too many people soon to protect them.
Exactly.
That's a bad thing.
Oh, that's what I say all the time. What are the feminists squawking about? White men have treated women the best, and without white men, there would be no feminist movement, and there would be white women would not be protected. It's hilarious.
Yes, again, one of the very interesting aspects as well, yes, among many others. And I think it also derives from so many different factors. And yes, it's a big thing, but an interesting thing. And I think those people who have strong identity, of course, it hurts them to see what is going on. But they are made to last. I mean, they don't they are not so, in this sense, weak mentality, especially, or mentally. Not weak at all.
Well, I always encourage guys, you know, there's got to be some good Finnish girls there, but if not, at least you can stay kind of closer to that area and venture out, maybe Sweden, maybe Norway, maybe St. Petersburg or Russia. There has to be some women folk out there that get it. There's more and more that are waking up that I'm meeting. So I hear from guys all the time who want a wife, who want children, and they're really struggling to find her out there. So I think you're going to have to do a little traveling, boys.
that's probably what will happen. And of course, I was a bit exaggerating. They are still, but especially youngster and the modern kind of mentality. So, but a little bit older, from 40 years old, 40, 50. I mean, those people still have something. But that's true. The Baltic countries, the Slavic countries, they have definitely differences over there. And
All right, Juho. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Did you have anything you wanted to share as far as websites or material?
Well, I think the best two issues would be, well, as you said already, Mr. Gerd Hofstede, those who are interested in cultures and especially multiculturalism. I think this guy at least can give some kind of a starting point to that. And the other one would be probably Mavericks of the Mind. That would be probably the best way to understand nature and the reality of nature, the language and forms and the mysteries. And that's one very, very interesting, not so much, of course, related to multiculturalism more, but they have some ecological stuff too. But because those are really the Mavericks of the Mind. You don't need anything else when it comes to science, because those guys, they were so deep. They were so deep into this. So that's I think, where I would start and probably finish.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time this evening.
Yes, thank you, and I wish all the best for you and Henrik and this Red Eyes Creations and Radio 14. It's a very, very, very good thing what you're doing, really.
Even the Green Parties, which we know are openly communist, do not touch the subject of mass immigration and its effect on the environment. They're utterly delusional. They seem to think if we can just get all the third world into white countries, then it will end poverty and suffering. Yet the poverty and suffering just seems to follow them wherever they go. All of a sudden, evolutionists are silent, not talking about how this pattern implies evolutionary and genetic rather than purely social, political, economic, or cultural causes. Let's talk about that science. The science that Marxists are now calling scientific racism because it does not support their cuckoo puff, la-la land, liberal psychosis. They'll say, but I know this one guy from Africa who made it when he got to England. So because one foreigner got to England and became successful and learned our way, we should now import millions into our land to give them the same chance. We should become minorities in our own countries, completely change the demographics, even sacrifice our culture to help them improve their quality of life. Even if that means our countries are so crowded that our children don't even have a patch of grass to play on. Well, guess what? Our children won't have any opportunity if they're a minority in the countries we built. I recommend a short video called Immigration, World Poverty, and Gumballs. Please go watch it on YouTube. There's a concept called Every Man's Right in the Nordic countries. It's recreational land that everyone can enjoy. And in Sweden, locals pick berries and cantarelles on this land during the season. They know to not take too much, but to save something for the others to enjoy. Well, can you guess what happens when non-Western foreigners use this land during berry and mushroom season? Hoarding. There's a concept I want to share with you in closing. I just learned about this today after the interview. It's called habitat fragmentation. It's usually created by humans when native vegetation is cleared for agriculture, rural development, or urbanization. Habitats, which were once continuous, become divided into separate fragments. And after intensive clearing, the separate fragments tend to be very small islands isolated from each other, creating a population fragmentation. This causes a species to become threatened or endangered because the isolation causes a reduction in land, changes in breeding, and they're more exposed to predators. It even demands a different characteristic from ancestors before the fragmentation occurred. Apply this to us. Our people's nations are beginning a process of fragmentation, becoming isolated from our own people, pushed to the corners of our land to make room for newcomers who are not native species. Think of white flight. This is the behavior of the initial stages of an endangered species. What's the solution? Think of Australia's borders. They're tough about bringing in foreign plants, seeds, wildlife, because it's a threat to their ecosystem, invasive species. It's no different with humans, thinking of our racial ecosystem. When the invasive species is discovered and has spread, that country battles to remove it because it creates a broad range of impacts that can even wipe out native plants and animals or change the landscape. We also get hit with economic losses from this damage. So we should apply our concept of protecting wildlife to protecting European people. The fact is, before mass immigration, when people stayed local, we didn't have such drastic issues with importing invasive species. It's upsetting to the natural balance of Earth. Can't we see that? Some argue that plants want humans to move them across the globe. I'd say within reason, and some are more invasive than others. I do have hope, though, that if all goes to hell on this planet, nature will set herself right again. Thank you, thank you, thank you, of course. Our website is redicecreations.com or radio314.com, where you can find our social networks and where you can help us out by signing up for a Red Ice membership. It does help. We have zero ads on our website and never monetize our videos, as we don't believe in supporting the companies advertising on YouTube. I mean, come on, most of them are anti-white, it's dirty money. Okay, everyone, have a great night and stay tuned for another show on Wednesday.